Hello, I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute. Welcome to this installment of Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Janine Krall, vice president of risk management for Nordstrom. And as a senior leader and a long-term influential player in the industry, Janine has a wealth of risk knowledge, helping make Nordstrom one of the great companies in the United States. Good morning, Janine, and welcome.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Awesome. I appreciate you taking in some time to talk to us on Sedgwick Institute Live. So before we get into the business of things that I normally address, tell me a little bit about your family and what you do for fun.
Well, I have an awesome husband that I've been married to for almost 25 years, actually. And I have a 19-year-old son who is just starting his second year in the business school at Boston College. And I also have two dogs and a very old cat. For fun, I like to spend time with my friends and family and doing anything active that, since I'm in Seattle, that changes depending on the time of year. I've been spending a lot of time bike riding lately, but now that the rains are coming, that's kind of coming to an end. My husband actually is always getting me to do other things as well. We just are starting a photography class next week, and last spring he got me into a drawing class at the University of Washington, so I think he's trying to explore the creative side of my talents, which is minimal. I'm actually doing, trying to do a lot more volunteer work in my community as well since my son's off at college. I just got my food and beverage serving license and have been actually doing a little work with that. Next Saturday, I'm actually working at the beer garden at the University of Washington football game. So go Huskies.
Cool. Yeah, I think you told me that you're headed down for a volunteer project, but cleaning up a shelter after we're done?
Oh, today, yeah, there is, Nordstrom's very active in our community, so we're doing a day of caring, and I'm going to be helping clean up a homeless shelter today.
Awesome. Good for you. So how long have you been, I know you told me you're a native of the Seattle area. How long have you been at Nordstrom's?
I have been at Nordstrom for 32 years.
Oh. Well, you're another one. I just, as I mentioned, I talked to Becky Robinson at Hobby Lobby earlier this week, and she's, I think, 26 years at that company. So how did you get into risk management?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people tell you this, but as with most people in the risk and insurance world that are my age, I got my start by applying to a blind ad right out of college that ended up being for a claims adjuster at Liberty Mutual.
And no kidding. That's my start as well.
Really?
It is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Liberty, what a great company. I actually don't think I would have applied if I knew it was a claims adjuster just because it's like, who wants to be a claims adjuster? But I am so thankful I applied to that ad. It's been such a good education and career. But I took the job essentially because they were offering a six-week training class in Southern California. And at the time, that sounded like a lot of fun just coming right out of college. So I ended up spending 3 years at Liberty Mutual as an outside multi-line claims adjuster.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went to another smaller insurance company in Seattle, and I helped start a worker compensation administration program there. Mm-hmm. And I also actually handled longshore claims, which was a very interesting claims experience. So that's how I got my start. It was such an amazing education. I learned so much. Back in those days, it was, you know, you get the company car and you're out visiting the injured workers, and before the days of cell phones. So I remember visiting longshoremen at their homes, and anyway, lots of crazy experiences, that's for sure.
No, that's so funny. You know, I mean, that's exactly my experience. You know, I was in the D.C. area. I got trained in Pennsylvania, and they gave me the car, and I had that same experience, you know, no cell phone. So, you know, spend 4 days and five on the road, come in the office for a day, get your reports done, and that's the job, you know.
Right.
And, I did it for just under 5 years, I think.
Yeah, so similar. And, you know, you think about how there's no GPS. Just even trying to get around and figure out where you're going, reading a map and driving. And, yeah, it's a whole different world today, that's for sure.
So what was the segue to risk management? How did you connect to the discipline?
Well, I really, as I said, I really loved being a claims adjuster and was really enjoying that work. But I ended up applying for a job at Nordstrom 32 years ago initially because the company I was at wouldn't pay me the same salary as men in the same job. Mm-hmm. So, again, 32 years ago, I was doing some longshore work, which I was the only female in my office that was doing longshore work. And it was kind of a big deal. And I said, I can do that. And I felt I was pretty good at it, but they wouldn't pay me the same rate. So I just thought, well, I'll just look and see what else is out there. So I ended up seeing an ad for a risk manager at Nordstrom. And I didn't really know what a risk manager was, but I applied and got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hired to be the Washington Region Risk Manager for Nordstrom, and my first job was to actually build a self-administered worker compensation claims program. So the risk manager at the time wanted to bring claims in-house, and so he hired me to do that.
Mm. Very interesting.
At the time, I had been handling claims for a while, and I really liked the idea of being part of one company, one client, versus handling so many different accounts and so many different lines of business. I really thought it would be a fun thing to do to really get engaged with just one company. So I was really excited to be able to do that.
So when did you make vice president?
That's a good question. That was about 10 years ago. Maybe 12 years ago. So I started at Nordstrom. There was about 5 people. And over time, we brought the worker compensation claims in-house. And then I kept getting loss runs for general liability claims. And I said, what's this? And started looking at the loss runs and said, hey, you know, let me dig into these too. And the risk manager at the time, again, was great. He let me take on new experiences as I saw them, and he ended up letting me bring those general liability claims in-house because there were some issues with some of the claims. And then eventually it was, well, let's bring in employment claims because those weren't really maybe being managed as well as they could have been. And at the time we didn't have an in-house legal department, so I volunteered to handle some uninsured litigation, some class action antitrust stuff, and it just grew from there. And when the risk manager retired, it was just an easy position for me to move into.
So are you in the legal department?
That's so funny you ask that. For probably 25 years of my career here, we've been in what would be called the chief administration officer role. And that position kind of dissolved, and we moved into the finance group. So I reported to the CFO up until last week. So brand new. We are now working within the legal department. So the legal department and the risk management department basically merged. So now I report to the general counsel. So the risk management department has about 75 people, and our legal department has about 12. So I would say it's more like the legal department merging with risk management.
You have 75 people. So a lot of those are, I guess, claims administrators?
Right. Yes, we're self-administered. Mm-hmm. And again, because of the way the risk department developed and grew up in terms of, you know, self-administering work comp claims and then general liability claims, and we started handling the employment claims and then some of the uninsured litigation because we didn't have an in-house legal department, so it just naturally progressed that way. So we have more lawyers in our risk department than we had in our legal department, which is why I think eventually it kind of made sense to combine the two.
Right. So you have lawyers working for you, but you're not a lawyer, is that correct?
No.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I've reported to lawyers and finance leaders and CAOs and the like, and I'm not sure, you know, which one I liked or the least or the most, but they were all different experiences.
Right, right.
So what's been your biggest accomplishment in your career so far?
Well, I would say just building a risk management program that has evolved and grown over the years, I think is probably what I would say my biggest accomplishment. And I think in terms of building the program, it's the focus that I've been able to keep on customer service, which is a core culture within Nordstrom. So I've been lucky mm-hmm. to have that customer service focus embedded in the culture, and mm-hmm. and the ability to apply that to a risk management program, I think, has been significant. So, you know, from bringing the worker compensation claims in-house and having our claim guidelines be all about customer service and embedding the prevention into that and everything we do. And then as we brought on additional claims and additional programs into the risk department, we just kind of kept that customer service prevention model.
Yeah.
So I think that I would say that really has been a significant accomplishment just over time, being able to day after day continue to keep our customer front and center into everything we do. And again, I call it our customer service model, or it, you know, and it's interesting to hear, you know, I love all the dialogue in the last few years about advocacy, but because I really believe that works. And I think our Nordstrom program, having done it for 32 years with trying to keep that customer front and center, whether it's an injured customer or an injured employee, we've had pretty much that program has remained relatively stable and the same principle for 30 years in everything we do. And I think the results are good. We consistently beat our peers in most of our claim metrics. And I believe our customers tend to be more satisfied. There's, you know, we're here to take care of them. What one customer at a time, what is, you know, if we can talk to those individual customers, what is it that individual person wants and needs? Everybody wants something different, but how can we work individually with each customer to help satisfy them? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the Nordstrom way, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, my son is a director of operations for a new entertainment concept here in Nashville, and the first thing the CEO did was hand out, is there a book called The Nordstrom Way? Is that my understanding?
There is, yeah.
Yeah, so he made all his leadership read that book because he wanted to model his customer service focus on the way you treat your customers. So you got people emulating you out there.
It's hard because you know, it's with all the laws and regulations and all the rules we have to follow, it's really hard to kind of keep that front and center, that use good judgment. How do you do your business every day using good judgment, which allows you to take care of the customer without having all these rules and regulations that force you to, you know, go a different direction.
Right. So in light of that, I think it leads me to a natural question is, I mean, I know you guys are, you no doubt did that because you wanted to be able to control that interaction more yourselves. But do you believe that it's not really feasible for a third party to do that on your behalf as well as you do it for yourselves?
Oh, I think third-party administrators, we actually have some locations where we do have a third-party administrator managing our claims, and I think they do a great job. I think that it is easier to administer claims when you are handling them yourself. You're the employer. You have all mm-hmm. the information. You have the direct connection with the department managers and the supervisors and the HR groups. So I think it's just easier because you mm-hmm. have everything at your fingertips, and you don't have mm-hmm. to you've built those internal relationships, so it's easier. But I think that TPAs play a, you know, a critical role in our industry, and we need them. And being self-administered is hard. It's a hard business, and particularly, you know, size. If you don't have a huge technology group supporting you, you don't have, you know, a lot of the infrastructure that a TPA has. But I do believe our bottom line results are very good because we are internal and we can make things happen.
But no doubt you expect the same of your partners, right? And particularly, I suppose, claim partners, that they would execute the Nordstrom way within the way they serve you, right?
Correct. And it's and we probably drive our TPA crazy because we know what we want and we're not shy to ask for it.
Mm-hmm. What about challenges? My guess is it's probably related to the same accomplishment, but what's your biggest challenge, Ben, in your career?
I think, you know, the very nature of risk management comes with challenges. Every day there's something new and different, hurricanes. That's what I think makes it exciting. Every day is different. But but I would say that the biggest general challenge that I have is probably technology related. In order to sustain a large risk management program and a self-insurance program or self-administered program, we need to make sure that we have the right tools to run an efficient and effective program. And I think the biggest challenges we have is making sure we have invested into those tools that make us be able to do the job. So, like, for example, our current risk management information system, we purchased and installed in 2001, and we've made it work for 17 years. But every year I go to RIMS and look at all the great new systems out there, and we're still with the same system. And, again, we make it work, but it would, I think the challenge is how do you get the budget and the infrastructure to sustain a program when as a business needs to be putting money into more the customer facing technology tools. So
making it and keeping it state of the art. Yeah.
Right.
So do you use that RMIS for your claims administration?
Yes, we use our RMIS system for, you know, it's we use it for a lot. The biggest challenge is getting reports out of it. It has tons of data. We put every event you could imagine in it. We put privacy incidents and uninsured and everything in there. And so it's a great tool. It really helps us. But sometimes it gets a little clunky since it is 17 years old. It wasn't built with today's technology.
Yeah. No, I've been there, done that. I understand. Hey, speaking of privacy, I know it's a big and growing exposure and challenge for a lot of businesses, no doubt yours as well. I understand you've got the privacy function under you. So tell me about what, you know, how that's working and, you know, where the big challenge is coming from.
Oh, wow. Privacy, it's such a big thing. Now, yeah, about two years ago, we were looking at, as we get into the digital world and we're mobile apps and how we're relating to our customers and customer employee data. We have all this data, and we need to protect that. That's a critical thing to make sure that we take care of that. But with more and more privacy regulations and information security, we really needed to figure out a way to have privacy compliance not be a blocker to our business. And it was getting very challenging. So we had a working group and we looked at, okay, how can we manage privacy compliance more efficiently and maybe more effectively integrated into the business? And it was in our technology group. And so we decided to move it into more of a legal risk management capacity. And I actually thought it was going to go to our legal department, but our general counsel thought it should be in risk management. So it we have about 7 people in our risk management department doing privacy compliance. And that's been really, really interesting and helpful because it's allowed us to integrate even further with our business partners, because technology and privacy integrates with everything we're doing as a company.
Yeah.
So it's allowed us to be more strategically at the table when we're discussing new initiatives. And so our privacy team is embedded with some of these business groups. And as we learn what's happening with the business, things are moving really fast, we're able to use the information our privacy team learns about to integrate other risk areas. So we're able to kind of have a more sweeping risk management view of company initiatives and then help the company up front come up with ways to execute strategies with the least risk possible. So it's been really helpful. It's to have the privacy group within the risk management department, because again, it allows us to learn more and be at the table and help from a strategic standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I imagine as we become more and more digital and digitized, it just makes that challenge all the more complex.
It does. It's fun. It's a very interesting area, and obviously that helps us with our cyber insurance, and our underwriters are, I think, pleased with how we're managing that risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then with business resiliency, we're responsible for business resiliency too, and so when we think about what are the different crises that could happen, you know, a breach is one, just like a hurricane or an earthquake or, so how do we, integrating a cyber or crisis or privacy breach into our global business resiliency program has been a critical function as well. So we're doing exercises, not just for earthquakes, but for cyber or privacy breaches as well.
Very good. So you have, I guess, what most people call business continuity planning under you as the something labeled business resilience?
Correct.
That's very good. And you're right. Privacy would fit right into that. No real difference, really. It's just another issue you got to deal with.
Right.
To keep the business going well. What about the word comp world? I know, you've mentioned it a number of times already. It's a big exposure for Nordstrom's, no doubt. How many employees, full and part-time, do you have?
I would say about 30 of our risk management department are devoted to just to workers' compensation. So it is our biggest functional area in terms of labor.
No, I meant in Nordstrom's. How many people are
full and part-time? Oh, how many people do we have at Nordstrom? Oh, we have about 75,000 employees just across the U.S. and Canada. We are not international.
Okay. North American only. So what's your perspective on the work comp world these days? I mean, there's been a lot of change, a lot of evolution. At one point, there was concern about federalization of comp. You've got, the Texas non-subscription alternative. You've got the challenges that are going on in Florida. How do you view the work comp world these days?
Well, I think it's an exciting time for our industry in general and workers' compensation. I think what's great is that people are talking about it now, about our system. And I think for many years it was, well, it's just work comp. And I think that's key, just keeping the dialogue going. It's not a perfect system. I think there are opportunities for improvement, but it's so complex and there's so many different players, but I just think it's positive that there's more dialogue around the importance of keeping the injured worker front and center and the advocacy. In the last few years, there's so much conversation around that, and I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
How do we, sometimes we lose sight of the purpose of workers' compensation and keeping that conversation going. And we became non-subscribers in Texas when we opened our first store in Texas. So we've known nothing besides non-subscription in Texas. And for us, mm-hmm. it works because we're self-administered. We focus on prevention. We focus on safety. And our program, that our plan that we provide to our Texas employees is, I would say, better than any other of that traditional work comp systems. But it's not going to work for everybody. Everybody's culture is different. So I just think the dialogue is really important. And what works in Texas may not work in another state.
Are you still interested in seeing option or some variation on non-subscription available in other states?
I do think we need to consider that and look at it in other states. Yes, I think there are responsible non-subscribers in Texas, and maybe some that aren't so responsible. But
right.
I do think that, again, it is a model that allows us to be front and center with our employees, and the costs are good too. So I absolutely think it's something that needs to be considered.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing that we really need is really a lot better data. That's why I think organizations like the Workers' Comp Research Institute are so important, and that as an industry we need to make sure that we support those types of organizations, because we really need the data behind us as well.
So you're not just talking about better data in Texas non-subscription, but across all of the work comp operation, and even
right,
more broadly, I'm sure.
Yeah. Compare different options on how
yeah.
how we look at, you know, continuous improvement for the work comp industry. Yeah.
Very good. Well, in the interest of time, I'd like to keep these things to 30 minutes or less if I can. So let's wrap it up with your advice to people considering coming into risk management, maybe university students or others. You know, what advice would you give to them, and what skills do you think they need to be successful in our world?
Oh, that's funny, because having a son college age, I've actually encouraged him and my friends to look at the insurance industry and risk management in general. Not something they typically think about, because they're all focusing on the big consulting firms, but I think it's a great career path, and there's so many opportunities. And so I've really encouraged my son and his friends and any other university students to really network, learn about it, and talk to people. It's such an exciting time with digital and technology and things changing in the insurance world. I think it's a...
Well, that encouragement's needed, right? Because, I mean, I think we've got about 60 or 65 institutions that are offering risk or insurance majors and minors. But still, the average preschool doesn't teach risk management. And Spencer Educational Foundation and others are doing their best to get the word out. But I still think the average even B-school student doesn't necessarily even know what risk management is, like you and I didn't know back in the day before we found out about it. So.
Right.
Well, great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say just even the RIMS, my son grew up with me every year going to the RIMS conference and, you know, bringing back the little toys. Mm. And so he's learned about risk management, obviously having a mother that's in the industry. So I've had to tell him it's not all about the fun RIMS events and parties, that there actually yeah. is work behind that.
It's funny you say that. My kids used to love that tchotchke, as I called it, from the conference. And then at
yeah.
about age 6 or 7, they began saying, that's really old, you know, passe, Dad. Find us something, bring us something, you know, valuable.
yeah.
Fell off the radar pretty quick. But, yeah, my kids kind of grew up with RIMS, too, because when I was in leadership there, you know, we used to bring the family along to the planning conferences and the like. So it's kind
of... Well, yeah, and the RIMS this year is in Boston, which is where my son's going to school, and he was really excited about that because now he's in the business school, and he's thinking about it actually, and talking to his friends about, hey, there's opportunities there. And he actually said, do you think I could kind of tag along with you to see what you're doing and the directors and officers, underwriter, you know, insurance meetings? And so I think that's really exciting. I think we all have to, you know, talk about it and make sure the kids know about it as an option.
Well, you should, if you're going, you should make sure he can maybe attend, say, a Spencer Educational Foundation reception, meet some of the students that are, you know, doing this full-time and focused on it. That's one way to get some great exposure to people that have already made that decision, you know, about their career.
Right, that's a great idea.
Yeah. All right, excellent. Well, thanks, Janine, for your time and insights. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thanks, Chris.
So to my listeners, you can find my speaking and writing schedule as well as other resources at the Sedgwick Institute website. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Sedgwick Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Till next time, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to try to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make our industry better.